Thanks so much for joining us today on Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. We're talking today with our regular guest from the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. With us, Michael Domke, the administrator for the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection. Michael, welcome back.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for having me.
And Michelle Reinen, who is director of the Bureau of Consumer Protection. And Michelle, great to have you back as well.
Thanks, Larry. It's always good to be here.
As we talk with our experts, I hope you'll join in. We'll talk a bit about increasing your financial literacy. We'll look at the latest scams and, of course, answer your questions. And if you have a consumer concern, I hope you'll join in. Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. Michael, let's start with you. April is Financial Literacy Awareness Month. What are some of the things we need to be aware of when it comes to being taken in by scammers?
Well, the first is just having awareness of what to look for. Scammers have increasingly sophisticated methods for convincing us to hand over our money. And these scams will usually involve someone claiming that they've identified fraud or suspicious activity on one of your accounts, and they're willing to help you protect your money. But they'll ask you to share your verification codes or ask you to move money around from one account into another. And all of these can be some of those red flags. And they'll usually start with things that we're typically used to seeing and help bring that awareness down, such as a computer pop-up. It'll often have the familiar branding or signs that we're looking for, such as the Windows or an antivirus system we're using. And it'll tell you that it has a free security scan and it's identified some type of compromise to your account and you need to act quickly. And within that pop-up, you'll see either a link or a phone number to call, and those are typically going to lead you straight to the scammer and begin that loss. Another is you might get a phone call or a text message from a company that you use or a shipping company that says, hey, there's a suspicious charge on your account or some type of compromise, and you need to take immediate action to fix that. Once again, it'll direct you where to go. And of course, it's usually going to lead to a fictitious website, or the scammer is going to be on the other end of that phone call. Lastly, is you might get that unsuspecting phone call from maybe a bank or a government agency that tells you you have to move your money to keep it secure, and they encourage you to deposit that into a local Bitcoin ATM. That cryptocurrency is the most secure way to keep it safe, and by doing so, you'll have control over it. And of course, all of these are red flags that it's most likely going to be a scam.
And you know, and if that money goes out of your account to someplace else, like that Bitcoin account, the banks are not really going to be able to recover that money for you.
Not always. You know, they are trained to look for suspicious activity, and certainly we've seen them become far better at detecting that and providing some guidance. However, at the end of the day, that consumer has the ability to do what they want with their money. And so if you do potentially fall for any of these scams and move your money around, you're not going to be as protected as you think. You know, we have that expectation that, well, if we get scammed and they were at the bank doing so, that they should reverse those charges, and that's not going to be the case. The cryptocurrency and that Bitcoin ATM is even more challenging because it's almost impossible to get that money back because it's very, very difficult to trace it and figure out where it went. And yeah, in most scams, that money's gone as soon as you deposit it.
You know, I'm thinking about debt a bit here. Many people find themselves in debt, need help getting relief, and I imagine there are some scams relating to that as well for somebody who's already in financial hardship, Michelle.
Absolutely. And, you know, usually if you're in that situation, you might be feeling the pressure of collectors or just feeling the stress of the compounding of that debt. And so you're looking for all available opportunities, and scammers are going to take advantage of that because nobody wants to be in debt or have that pressure and stress. So those opportunities for debt relief can be very tempting to consumers. And again, those scammers just play on that opportunity. So knowing how to identify those debt relief scams is really going to be a valuable tool for individuals. Never pay anyone who tries to collect money up front. I mean, that's just that's illegal. And so if someone's asking you for money up front, that needs to be a red flag for individuals. We talk regularly about not sharing your financial or personal information with individuals who call out of the blue, let alone those that you are even expecting to receive a phone call.
Sure.
Usually it's just when you initiate that phone call to someone you know and trust, and you're giving very limited information for identity purposes or for the type of transaction, but you are very confident in who you are speaking with, and trust would be the only time. But if you are asked during a phone call that is unexpected and they're offering to help settle your debts and ask for that, that needs to be a red flag to give that information. And anyone who's going to guarantee you results from a government program or a new government program for a fee, or tries to enroll you without first reviewing your actual financial situation and going through it with you, that, again, a big red flag. If they think that they understand everything that's going on, but you haven't actually had any kind of consultation, you've just had a vague conversation, they're just after your information and after your money. And so that will just, again, compound that further. So whether you have credit card debt or student loan debt or any other form of debt, you know, all the different forms or many of them, scammers might appear to be legitimate. They might appear to be offering real services, but they can collect a lot of money on just upfront fees and lying to you about the services that you are delivering, that they are wanting to pretend that they're going to deliver. So call your creditors, call any of those service providers and explain your situation and see if you can manage your debt on your own. That's often if you're honest with them and explain the situation you're in, you can maybe get on a different form of payment plan and help to manage and lower those payments, as well as maybe you want to seek out yourself a credit counselor or a credit counseling program to help manage your money and debt. And you can look for these services at credit unions, banks, universities. There are debt counselors out there in community organizations. The military has financial managers that can help if you've been of service there. And so there's lots of options, but check them out if it's not a resource that you've normally used. Before you engage with anyone, call the Department of Financial Institutions to check out the services. And again, don't pay anything up front. You may need to pay a fee once you know exactly what they're going to do for you and have conducted that service for you, because they are providing you a service. Many are free, but some there may be a fee for. So just don't pay it up front.
On that note, we'll turn to the phones for questions. And Stella in Sturgeon Bay, you're up first here. Stella, great to have you call in. What's on your mind?
Hi. I'm calling because we think we might be on the receiving end of a scam, but we're not sure. The situation is we have property on Chambers Island in Door County here.
Yeah.
That we are looking to sell, and it's 500 feet of waterfront, 6.58 acres of upland wood, upland woods, hardwoods, and it's a 40-foot bank overlooking Fish Creek and Peninsula State Park. And we've received four unsolicited offers in the mail. The first two were real lowball offers. I saved them for a while just out of curiosity, but I didn't save them, so I don't have exact figures there. But they were about $29,000, maybe $30,000. And then we received March. We received quite a few months ago. In March, we received an offer for purchase of, for $62,500.
Sure. And so you're worried about whether or not this is legitimate?
Can I finish?
Can you shorten it up a little bit for us?
Okay. Well, we responded to that one. We sent a counter offer, and he called us back, and he said that his offer was as high as he could go, and our counter was, we told him, is as low as we could go. And so he said, okay, short call. And then just on Tuesday this week, just a couple days ago, we received an offer of between $316,500 and $451,600 for this 6.58-acre property.
And you're wondering, is this legitimate?
We're wondering if this might be a long scam. These offers have come from different addresses, different cities, but
okay.
Many of them have postmarks in Florida.
Yeah, well, so that makes you worry. So, Michael, how does Stella go about looking into this?
Well, there is a mix of legitimate offers out there, and also we're aware of some of those postcards being scammed, and it is difficult to pick out exactly which one it is at face value, because there are legitimate companies making offers to purchase properties, whether it be for investment or just to flip them. However, we're also aware that some of those scammers are sending out those offers, and what they're trying to do is initiate that conversation, start getting some of that information, and we've even seen some scenarios where they start making some of those down payments or an earnest payment, and then all of a sudden they're gone. So it's difficult to say specifically which one of those may or may not be a scam, but you certainly can be aware of what you should be cautious of, and we have some information on our website that can help with that. But also I would encourage to consult with a realtor. You know, reach out, find out if there's a situation, especially if you're getting into those higher values and higher numbers. It may be worth finding out what a realtor's take is, or even enlisting them to assist with that, because it does provide several safeguards to make sure you don't get scammed and recourse if something goes wrong.
Yeah, I think a realtor in the area who knows would certainly have an idea as to the value of the property and would have some background on potential scams as well.
And you could be able to validate that a bank's going to approve the amount that they have, or that the individual has the amount that they're offering as well. A realtor can help that. I mean, when you used to get pre-approvals from banks, if you're looking, if this is a corporation, it's a little different, but you can validate that the money's legit, not a fake check scam or some other scammer where you'll have surrendered the property and have no money at the end of the day. So, as Michael mentioned, a realtor can help with all of those things and legworks. Didn't hear mention of Stella.
No,
indicating she's working with a realtor.
Yeah, I think a realtor in this situation would be very useful. Stella, good luck with that. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. We will be getting on to Lyman and McFarland. Lyman, hi.
On CNBC, you know, national cable network, on Sunday morning, sometimes there's a half hour infomercial with grade C cult celebrities like Newt Gingrich. And what they're doing is making it seem like somebody can just forge some documents and steal the title to your home away from you, and this is a subscription service, and you pay per month, and it prevents this from happening. I have never heard of this, and it seems obvious that they're preying on older people who might be, fearful of this. I want to see what your guests have to say about this.
All right, Lyman, thank you. Michael?
Well, this particular scam, we've heard about this, and that involves what they're alleging of these scammers coming in and kind of stealing the deed or the property out from underneath you and without really any knowledge to the homeowner. And while we are aware that those have occurred, it is very difficult, and there's a lot of kind of safeguards that are put in place between that. A lot of information has to be known. There's a lot of things that have to go right for that to occur. So I think that stigma and the risk and the danger that they've put around that, how easy it is to do, may be a little inaccurate. There are things that if you learn about what those steps are and how you're protected and where you should go to look for that, some of that information, you'll find out that it's not quite as prevalent as they're making it out to be. And those services that we're seeing on those commercials are like many other, you know, identification protection or bank account protection or services that are out there. And you really just need to pay attention to what are they truly offering, and then balance that with what can you do yourself for free. And, you know, we talk about identity protection many times here on the show, and our website provides resources on how you can do that for yourself and what you should look out for. So I don't know that in regards to the particular product that he's referring to or what's being pitched, but I would take caution, find out what you can do yourself, and then maybe you need it, maybe
from there.
Yeah. Lyman, thank you very much for calling. Taking a look at all kinds of consumer protection issues today with our two guests, Michelle Reinen and Michael Domke of the division, the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade and Consumer Protection within the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection. Great to have them with us. Questions, give a call at 800-642-1234 or email to ideas@wpr.org. Jill Nadeau is our producer today. Our technical director is Tyler Ditter. I'm Larry Mueller for Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you along today as we look at consumer protection issues with Michelle Reinen and Michael Domke from the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection within our Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Michelle's actually the director of the Bureau of Consumer Protection, and Michael's the administrator for the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection. So great to have them with us. Join in. The number's 800-642-1234, or you can email us to ideas@wpr.org. Michael, you mentioned credit, and Terry in Madison called, but she couldn't stay on the line. She'd like to know more details about setting up a credit freeze. Do both she and her husband need to do this separately? Will they need different passwords for each credit card reporting company? What happens if they forget their passwords? How hard is it?
Well, it is not hard at all to place a freeze on your credit, and you just need to do that with each of the three credit reporting agencies. I would encourage each of them to do it separately because they have their own individual identification and accounts and things. So placing that freeze on, if you go to our website at datcp.wi.gov, we have a lot of information and specific steps to help you follow through that, where to go, how to do it. In regards to maintaining those passwords, I think that's like any password guidance we give. You know, there's certainly tools that can help you do that. We also actually have, resources and fact sheets on how to create passwords, how to save those, how to maintain them, all on our website. But I would absolutely encourage them to put those freezes on, and really anybody that's listening, to help give that little added protection. And it's very easy also to, as we call, thawing that out, because everyone says, well, if I put this freeze on it and I want to apply for a new loan or a new credit card, you know, how hard is that going to be? It's not hard at all. It can be taken off very quickly, put back on. And we also encourage everyone to think about their children and family members. Oftentimes we think, well, we only get credit when we're adults, but when we're born, we have social security numbers, birthdays, and we have an identity that can also be misused for criminal purposes. And that, unfortunately, we hear about children finally turning 18, applying for credit, wanting to establish it, and it had been misused and stolen many, many years ago. And their first step is trying to recover that, which is tough.
Rose in New Glarus, we'll go to you next. Hi, Rose.
Hello there. I just wanted to make a comment. I was working with my brother who lost $95 out of his checking account by an entity called Robinhood, okay? And my brother is totally off the grid. I mean, he's still doing a flip phone. And anyway, but he was smart enough to check his paper bank statement and went right directly to his bank, and they are getting the money back from him. But the question I have is, well, 2 points. The one thing he did was, for passwords, not use family, you know, like your mother's, grandmother's maiden name and all that stuff. They suggested using a phrase because folks can check genealogy and get some of this stuff. And the other thing is they're working on getting his money back, but he has two entities that do an automatic withdrawal for payments of some sort. That's the only thing the guy does as far as automatic. And now, do you know if the bank or any entity will follow up on how this possibly could have happened to him?
Michelle, what do you think?
Well, first, Rose, thanks for sharing that story and the reminder about using a passphrase versus just a password. That is advice that we give about secure passwords, long and strong, and that usually means a passphrase that you can remember and not information that's part of an identity thief's little basket of goods. Maiden names are one of the triggers that can be used at banks and everything, so that's great. As to your question, you should ask the bank that if they're going to follow up, because each bank's different as to its fraud department and how strong it will follow up and the trends that it sees. And depending upon activity that they see, they're going to work with their local law enforcement or their FBI if they're seeing patterns of conduct with their individual banking members. There are many, depending upon the communities that they live in, banks that come together to meet regularly to also discuss things that are happening in a community to be sure that they're not all being impacted individually in a silo, that they are making sure that there is that continuity of information between them. But so I would ask the bank if they're going to follow up and what security measures they may put in place or monitoring to be sure that this Robinhood isn't going to extend to something else. You know, is the bank account number going to be changed where those auto withdrawals that he does have set up will need to be changed or transferred over just so there is that extra security built in?
Yeah. Rose, thank you very much for calling. Good luck. Appreciate it. Tim in Washburn, we'll go to you. Hi, Tim. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I got a question. We currently have our all three credit reports frozen, but insurance companies, we got a bill, and it's a company called LexisNexis Consumer Center, and they are getting what they call consumer reports. I went online. I'm getting a report. I see in mail it's arriving today, but it looks like I can put a freeze on that report. Just wondering what your thoughts are on that. And
LexisNexis.
Well, the three major credit reporting agencies are required by federal law to extend the security freeze for free to consumers. And so others may be following suit that also compile data. And LexisNexis is a tool that's out there that compiles data. They aren't in themselves, as I understand, one of the major credit reporting agencies. They will compile all sorts of different information, not just related to a credit report. And so they may offer a service. I can't guarantee that it would be free because they wouldn't fall under that federal legislation that passed back in, I think it was 2017, 2018, to put this in place for consumers. So, but you indicated your insurance company be involved with the LexisNexis Consumer Center. So I guess I'd go back to your insurance company and inquire with them as well as to any connection there so you fully understand before you engage with them.
Yeah, that makes very good sense. Tim, good luck. Appreciate it. Norman in Wausau, we move on to you now. Hi, Norman.
My wife and I'm in my late 80s, and she in her mid-80s. We have a 200-yard-long driveway going uphill to our road. And what happens is the UPS truck leaves the parcels out by the road. And I'm talking about 8 or 10 feet off the highway, a big parcel. And I've talked to – I got a hold of once the supervisor – but I can't get a hold of them again, and they're still doing it, and it makes a major problem for us. One time I didn't get the parcel until about 8 days later when I was plowing snow on a tractor I have that I can drive yet, and when I plowed the snow here, I see there was something laying in the snow, and it was a parcel he'd left there. But The problem is I can't seem to get a hold of them, and when I did, it didn't seem to result in anything. Can you guys do anything about it? They should deliver the parcels to the house or near the house, not a couple hundred yards away.
Yeah, okay. Michael?
Well, Norman, that is really unfortunate. And the best I could say is if you're not getting that satisfaction in reaching out with them and they're not doing kind of what you've asked or what we think the agreement is, you can certainly file a complaint with us and we'll provide those mediation resources for you. We'll try and get in contact with UPS and ask them if there is an opportunity to resolve that and put it in a better place so that the package are safeguarded. You can get it. They don't get wrecked. And especially, you know that they're there. So you can do that on our website at datcp.wy.gov. Or, Norman, I would encourage you to just give us a call at 1-800-422-7128. And one of our team members will help you get that complaint filed and get that thing going for you.
Yeah. Again, that's 1-800-422-7128. We'll probably be repeating that. Or what, datcp.wy.gov is the other online version of it. So there you go, Norman. We'll see what the consumer protection can do for you on that. Appreciate it. Rhonda in Black River Falls will give you an opportunity. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi. I have two different things to bring up. My son experienced someone stole mail out of his mailbox. And he was paying bills with it, and one of the checks ended up being, I think they called it check washed, and he found when he balanced his statement that there was $500 out of his account that he hadn't, you know, spent, and it all worked out. He called the bank, he got the money back, and eventually this person was caught and is now in jail. But people, I just want to make sure people are aware of the fact that this can happen.
Yeah. Check washing, Michelle.
Yeah, it's a real thing. It was something we talked about more often probably 10 years ago, and then other forms of identity theft, like technological forms, came about, and now we're seeing it again. So it's a great reminder. Thank you, Rhonda, that it exists. Some tips for consumers that we've learned along the way, as far as using a standard ink pen, they'll be able to wash that off. But if you use a gel pen that's promoted against check washing, that shouldn't be able to be cleared off the check. So if you are using checks, using that gel pen that protects against check washing. The other thing is where you're mailing from. I understand her son was using the mailbox. And for us, when we give presentations, we kind of say, when you put the flag on the mailbox, it says, hey, look at me, come get me, you know. And that is the flag for the postal person, but it is for the identity thief as well. So we talked about using the blue mailbox, but we've also heard incidents of mail carriers being threatened against, you know, when they're picking up that blue box and having mail stolen from them. So if you can just go to the post office inside and drop the mail, that's going to be the ultimate piece. And then the blue box at the post office will also be more watchful than one that's on a corner type situation. But that's a more secure method than just your box out front in depositing. Or if you can, you know, take and go, some people let you drop the check directly with the utility company, that they have a drop box. That often works as well and saves the stamp, if you will, and have connection with your community. But some different tips on doing that.
And Rhonda, you had another question, I think?
Yes. I'm sorry. Yes, I do.
Go ahead.
People that are looking for medical help and they haven't gotten it per se from the normal medical community, so they're checking online and they're finding other ways, because I know someone who's going through this, that they're pretty desperate, you know, with pain, et cetera. So there are lots of things out there. How do you determine if any of these reviews of people that claim to have been helped are in fact true? Is there any way to check that out or not?
Michael, go ahead.
checking reviews and verifying your legitimacy can be a little difficult. What we would recommend and have is, if you see a particular practice or product, is kind of using a search engine and adding the word scam or complaint or fraud to learn a little bit more about the legitimacy of the program or product. The reviews certainly can be helpful. We know they're used for a lot of things. There is a certain risk that comes with placing all of your confidence in those, because there are certain companies that are paid to provide reviews. Not all companies or products or services will vet their reviews or make sure. We've seen some of the bigger companies verify that it was somebody who truly purchased the product or used it. So that helps provide a little confidence. I don't know that there's an absolute 100% confident way for you to say this review is accurate, it's perfect, and this is why I should purchase or pursue that particular thing. But there are some things you can do to fact check it a little bit more. Lastly, if you are looking at a particular company or product, you can certainly call us at the Bureau of Consumer Protection and just ask if there's been any complaints filed against them. We'll be happy to tell you that, and that might provide you a little bit more comfort or confidence in moving forward.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call, Rhonda. And speaking of that, I believe there was a suit that involved, it had to do with vacation scams that you guys might have been involved with. And Michael, I mean, it's a kind of a different topic in a way, but there were untruthful statements or made up statements by people about how they were helped.
This was in dealing with a vacation company, and it really had to do with those timeshares and being able to get out of those. And the misleading representations were that they would guarantee that they could get you out of your timeshare, and they could do it quickly, and they had these relationships. And the downfall of that was they would ask you to pay a lot of money up front. And of course, then what would happen is they would sometimes they would send a letter, sometimes they wouldn't do anything at all. But ultimately, they were misrepresenting what they were able to do. And there are certainly several ways that you can safely exit a timeshare, but it takes a lot of research, and you really got to pay attention to who you're working with. And, you know, we provide some services and in our resources on what those red flags to look for, how you can do so with a little bit more confidence. But ultimately, what we recommend everyone is don't jump into it right away. If you get that solicitation, either in the mail or a phone call, or you are looking, pause, think about it, do a little bit of research, and go with a trusted company.
Yeah, I think that particular company was using people saying that, oh, we got all this great help, and that was just made up.
That was certainly one of the aspects. They were embellishing how much services or the quality of service they were providing, and also adding a lot of fake reviews. We've seen that also occur where the federal government has held several businesses accountable, saying they were manipulating the reviews. And, of course, that led to more consumer confidence.
Nick in Fort Atkinson will give you an opportunity now. Hi, Nick.
Hey, I just wanted to respond to the gentleman that was kind of wondering why his UPS driver isn't getting stuff all the way down his driveway. So I'm a FedEx contractor, and I know that most of us are really dedicated to get the stuff to your door, but there are some things that can prevent us. And he mentioned that while he was plowing the snow, he ran into the package. Well, if the driveway isn't cleared enough, these are huge, heavy rear-wheel drive vehicles, and they're pretty easy to get stuck. So if that's a possibility, most of us aren't going to come down your driveway if it's not clear, just because then we're not going to be able to deliver everyone else's packages for the day. And another thing, two other things that people don't tend to think about is the clearance coming down your driveway, especially rural. I do a lot of rural routes. And your Suburban, your big truck might fit down it just fine, but these trucks have a 10 to 12 foot height clearance. And if we break off branches, I don't know how it is at UPS, but at FedEx, I've got to pay for that out of my own paycheck. So if I break something and someone complains, I've got to pay for an arborist to come out and take care of it. And then the last thing would be an unsecured pet. It might be just fine around you. It might be fine around other people. But for some reason, they see our uniforms and they're like, hey, I got to go get that guy. So I try to hedge my bets by having treats and stuff on me at all times to throw out like chafe if I need to. But those are some of the causes as to why he's not going to be able to. Maybe why they're not getting the packages to them. And unfortunately, it's just as hard to get a hold of FedEx corporate, whether it's a compliment or a complaint, too. So I definitely sympathize with them there. Just my input from a driver that's out here doing it.
Nick, thank you so much for calling. I think those are all good points, Michelle.
Yeah, absolutely. Really appreciate Nick lending that perspective from the boots on the ground doing the work. And sorry about the dogs.
I was dog sitting for a friend, and we were walking in the street, and the dog saw a postal worker and immediately wanted to get over to that postal worker, because the postal person who stops by Lila's door always has a treat. So she recognized the uniform, and she was, I want to get over there, and I think she got a treat that time, too.
That's a good way to train them.
Nick, thanks again for calling. Appreciate your call. Susan in northern Wisconsin emailed, for 2 days in a row, she received calls from the same number. She didn't know, so she didn't pick it up. But they left a message starting with, is this Susan? And if this is, correctly say yes. Could you talk a little bit about yes scams and how they know her name and phone number in the first place?
Yeah, so a yes scam is one that we've heard about recently again, that is probably from 3 or 4 years ago, where there was a number of phone calls going around the nation where the scammer was trying to get the consumer to say yes. And it started with, like, can you hear me? They would have some static. Can you hear me now? And the consumer would say yes. And the idea was that now that scammer had the voice impression of the individual saying yes, so they could use that for affirmative consent and prove that you had asked for or indicated that you were willing to make this payment for whatever they were selling, and you would see these charges then on your credit card for that item, and that their proof would then be that the voice clone of you saying yes. Well, now we have artificial intelligence that we're dealing with, and we're really monitoring that this year because of how we are watching scammers manipulate that technology to take voice clones off of social media and use it to present as a grandchild in a friends and family scam or a grandparent scam. So people think that they are really talking to a family member using that voice clone. They could be doing the same thing with the yes, or just trying to cycle an old scam. And yeah. So monitor your credit card. Don't respond using simple words, yes or no to questions. Hang up unless you know who it is, or a question back, not just a simple one-word response if you are really engaged in a phone call that you think is legitimate.
All good points, and thanks so much for that question. Michelle Reinen, Director of the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection, and Michael Domke, Administrator for the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection, both, of course, within the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. I'm Larry Mueller for Wisconsin Public Radio. Taking up consumer protection issues today with Michelle Reinen and Michael Domke from the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection within our Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Questions, call at 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. Mark in Wisconsin Dells, thank you for joining in. What's on your mind?
Larry, I asked an eagle's nest in Hub City. How about that? Anyway, what I called in to say was, if you really have a problem that you might lose money from somebody soliciting who could be bogus, just hire a private detective. It may cost a few hundred dollars, but in about 10 minutes, these guys will have your answer. And they are mostly retired police detectives. They have resources that you and I have nothing have no ability to get to or any knowledge about, but they're great. They're fast.
Mark, thank you for calling. Yeah, what do you think, Michael?
Well, if you have the resources to do so, it certainly couldn't hurt to get that little added boost of confidence. We would encourage that if you are getting some of those unsolicited phone calls or emails, first and foremost, just don't respond to them. If you want to really do that digging and find out who's behind it, you could certainly hire someone. But also, if you're getting them regularly, give us a call. Reach out to us, file a complaint, let us know that those calls are coming in. Also, we would encourage everyone, if you're getting these calls, if you're not on our Do Not Call registry, to go ahead and sign up for that. That will help reduce some of those phone calls that telemarketers are required to make sure they don't reach out to and screen against it. So that will reduce it. And then lastly, if you're having some of those issues and you give us a call, we can also help you find out if that phone number or that particular scam is known or it's been going around or even trending, to give you the peace of mind if you don't have the resources to hire that private detective.
Yeah, good points. Beth in Eagle River, on to you now. Hi, Beth.
Hi, Larry. I have a question regarding using a credit card that is also a debit card, and that would require using a PIN. Is it safer to use your card as a credit card if you have that option?
I think so, but I don't know. Michelle, what do you...
Yeah, so credit cards have federal protection for disputes. If they're lost, stolen, or if you dispute a charge because you think it's resulted from a misrepresentation or a scam, and you go through the Comptroller of Currency. But a debit card's going to draw the money immediately and directly from your bank account, whereas a credit card, you pay when your billing cycle comes due. So there's a little bit of a pause there before the individual gets their funds. So we always advise leaving the bank card, the debit card at home when you travel, and you take that credit card with you for travel because of those extra protections that come under federal regulations.
Yeah, it makes very good sense to me. Beth, thank you for calling. Alice in Madison, what's on your mind?
Thanks, Larry. I really like purchasing things online, and, you know, tracking notices that now come with purchases seems like they would be really helpful. I live in a building where packages can be stolen within minutes of arriving, and so I watch those tracking notices really carefully. But what I found recently is that they're pretty useless. They're just misinformation, and they've caused me a lot of stress. Just yesterday, a postal employee told me that the on-the-ground and on-the-line information are just like separate worlds. Do your guests know where this tracking information actually comes from? Is it coming from the vendor who sold me the product, or is it actually coming from the companies like FedEx and UPS? And how can I know whether the information is actually accurate?
Michelle?
Well, this might be a tag team one for sure, but some of it's going to be depending upon the service that the company you purchase the item from is using. So if they're handing it off to United States Postal Service and they hand you that tracking number, now the information's coming from the Postal Service. Same with some other major tracking companies. But others are going to use some lower rate providers, and then you're getting the information from the retailer through the company that may or may not hand it off to someone else based on best rates. And so I've even had experiences where I've called the retailer because it's been X weeks and I haven't seen an update or my package, and they said, well, the information's only as good as we're receiving, and they're the ones feeding me the information because of the service provider that they've chosen to use for that lower rate. So it's going to vary is what I unfortunately have to tell you. But I always go back to, if I have a tracking number to that source versus responding to an email if I want to check on something, or go to the retailer where I purchased and look at my account and call their customer service to help me track it versus, again, responding to an email out of the blue because there's so many shipping scam emails out there trying to get your information.
Yeah, those shipping scam, I've gotten a lot of those, your shipping scam kinds of things where they want you to call them back. And I don't have anything being shipped. But if you do have something being shipped, I could see where you might get duped.
Absolutely. And that's where I thought Alice's call was leading, is that she starts getting these notifications. But Michelle hit it perfectly. What we want you to do is verify that tracking information or the status of it at the source that you bought it from, or that trusted website for the shipping company who says that they're sending it.
Marge in Dane County, we go to you now. Hi, Marge.
Hi there. I have a problem. I have received on the phone a notice that I have won $4,000. It's from the Reader's Digest company. However, my phone told me this was potential spam, so I have not answered it. Can you tell me what to do?
Yeah. All right, Michael?
Well, Marge, the first question I would ask is, did you participate in any sweepstakes or offer or prize notice that Reader's Digest was promoting? And if you hadn't, then I would absolutely say that's most likely a scam, because, you know, what we tell in a lot of presentations is it's you can't win a prize that you didn't sign up for. The other thing I would be very cautious of is if they really did have that, or if that scam will oftentimes carry with it some type of requirement that you need to pay a fee to claim that prize or pay the taxes or some other upfront payment. And we want everyone to be aware that in Wisconsin, it is illegal to require any type of payment for claiming that prize. You certainly are entitled to get it if you want it, but how the scams work is they want you to pay the taxes or a shipping fee or a processing fee in order to get it. So those would be the red flags. What I'm hearing from you, Marge, is that's most likely a scam, and unfortunately, I don't think you won.
Yeah, there you go, Marge. Thank you very much for calling. Well, Patricia in River Falls, what's on your mind?
Hello. Yes, I was wondering about Open Wallet. Is that a legitimate kind of group? I was trying to transfer my telephone service, which is a home line, from AT&T and asking to go into the new internet service that's come in at half the price. And he told me to get a portal transfer PIN from AT&T. So I called AT&T and got through after a while, and they transferred me to this Open Wallet group. And at that point, they had arbitrary questions. And when I got done with their questions, I was very careful because it was so surprised me. They wanted the make of cars, and that I'd owned at one time was 5 in each list, and there were 3 lists. And in the end, something about a person that we long ago knew but don't now. And about that time, I got some kind of a notice from Norton coming through saying, this is a crank call. And I thought, I'm the one who made it. How could that be? So I told the fellow, because by then he had said, you didn't pass. You cannot have that number. I did it twice, had the same thing happen. Now I'm a little worried about it. And I wondered, the only thing I could think of is maybe because I had put a freeze on my credit accounts, I didn't take it off before I made this call. Was that anything to do with it?
It would be
hard to say on that, wouldn't it?
It would be tough to say if those two are tied together or if it's just a coincidence that is causing what I think invalidates your concern. For me, I'm not familiar with Open Wallet or what they support, but the level of detail and personal information that they were asking for would cause me concern. And certainly it would raise an alarm if they're asking to obtain those PIN numbers from any carrier, whether it be a phone, internet, anything. So I think your caution in providing any more information is certainly validated, and I'm glad to see that. The other point is where they actually want to take that and what service is being provided. That's a lot of detail to simply transfer a service. So Michelle may have a little bit more on that.
Yeah, well, I just have more questions for you to take and go ask. One, since it's AT&T, there are AT&T centers, and maybe you're by one and can go there physically and ask some questions of it. But what phone number did you use as your reliable resource to contact AT&T? If you use it from your phone bill, that's great. And then you could ask more questions of their service reps about Open Wallet before they transfer you. But the second thing is, if you Googled it and AT&T came up, in a first, scammers try and use and hijack numbers and redirect you by buying some spots. So it's potential that if you look for a phone number online, that you actually did call a scammer and were transferred. And the only hesitation I have about all those questions is you're trying to port your phone number to a new provider and maybe phone, and that's going to be something that's pretty locked down and secure. And so they will get into you needing to confirm and validate who you are with some real serious questions. And so that's my hesitation with that one, that it could be legit in your needing to transfer. And so you might have to go in person if you're not passing their screens either.
Yeah, there you go, Patricia. Good luck, though. Appreciate your call. Michelle Reinen and Michael Domke from the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection, our guests today, and they'll be with us right up till 12:30. You can join in. We've got Dennis and Appleton. Hang on. We'll be with you and also with you. Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. And we'll be back right after this look at the news. Stay with us. Thanks for joining us today on Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. We're talking consumer protection during Financial Literacy Awareness Month with our two guests, Michelle Reinen, Director of the Bureau of Consumer Protection, and Michael Domke is the Administrator for the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection, of course, both within our Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Questions, give a call, 800-642-1234, email to ideas@wpr.org. And let's go to Dennis and Appleton next. Dennis, thank you for calling. What can we do for you?
Thanks for listening. I get the question I have is we had a our long-term care insurance company was hacked, so there's like over several million people. And they gave us a year of protection, and also we froze all our accounts. But I'm trying to figure out, one is like saying, okay, after the year, do we still have to continue some type of protection? Because then could they sit on it for over a year and then possibly use it to do some changes to our account? And the other question is that, the last few years, my wife and I, we've had a number of times our credit card gets compromised, so we end up having to cancel it, and then you gotta wait 10 days to get a new one. But we're really not getting any specific information about saying, okay, what are we doing something wrong, or is it just because of the ability of people to scam or be able to maybe check your credit card. It's getting a little frustrating, but it just happened again because my wife just went on a mini vacation, and there's an extra charge on the credit card that we're disputing. But then all they said, well, we'll just cancel it and send you a new one. You can dispute that one, that's fine, but it's like trying to figure out what other things that we can do that protect ourselves.
I feel your pain, Dennis. I had that happen to me a couple of times, and both times I was on vacation. But thankfully, the credit card company canceled off. In fact, they called me once and said, did you really order this necklace and have it sent to Colorado? And I said, no. And they said, that's what we thought. So we, but it is a pain because then if you have your credit card you're using it to pay monthly debts, then you've got to go through that rigmarole of, the new numbers and everything, Michelle.
Yeah, absolutely. That we've gone through it as well. And if it's happening frequently to these individuals, that can be quite burdensome. It wouldn't hurt to ask the credit card company. You're not getting information, but you may be able to ask them, you know, this is the fourth time in 1 year that this has happened. Are you seeing a pattern of conduct? Is it a particular store? Should we not be paying at the pump and go inside with the attendant? Or, you know, they may have identified, and if they've identified, hopefully they're working with law enforcement as to what it is. But there, if it sounds like you travel, and so there's lots of different opportunities where that can happen, and that data can be obtained. And then if you're an online shopper, you can always check the security of your computer and your system and router to be sure that that's locked down and there isn't some way that someone's getting the information regularly through there. You know, that's what I'd say to the second question, and pass that first question off to Michael with the long-term care.
Yeah, Dennis, it's unfortunate that's happening, and I think we're hearing more and more about these data breaches, and afterwards, a lot of these companies are providing that service. But something you can do proactively is recently the government made it permanent where you can check your credit report each week for free. And so that's a great resource for you to go ahead and be proactive in looking at that to see, you know, when that credit card potentially gets compromised again, to have awareness whether there's new accounts being opened up, maybe potentially new loans, and certainly checking those cards for charges. And the other is making sure that you're not reusing passwords. It sounds really simple, but each time you have a data breach, you may be using the same username and password for other websites or payment portals. And once that gets out there, sometimes that can have that ripple effect where they're looking everywhere and where that's being used and compromising it there. So each time, just make sure you're trying to change those up as much as possible.
Yep, absolutely. Dennis, thank you for calling. Appreciate your call. Kyle in Winnebago County, we'll go to you. Hi, Kyle.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call, Larry, Michael, Michelle.
Thank you for calling.
So I have an elderly friend. He's in his mid-80s, and I was talking to him. He said he got in some options trading deal with a site called, like, bullishrocket.com, and he sent him about $10,000. And then he was calling to get some information. They said the account's up to $40,000. He wanted to take some money out, but in order to get the money, he needed to send another $500. It doesn't sound right to me. I'm worried about him. What can he do if he did get himself in a scam situation?
It doesn't sound good, Michael.
No, Kyle, that is unfortunate. It does have some of those indicators of a potential investment scam. We would certainly want to pause before sending any more money. You also could reach out to the Department of Financial Institutions Division of Securities. They deal with this type of scam and investment issues all the time. They're the real true experts. So I would really recommend giving them a call and seeing what opportunities they have to dig in and help with that.
Yeah, is it the Department of Financial Securities?
The Department of Financial Institutions and their Division of Securities is who really focuses on that.
Here in Wisconsin.
Here in Wisconsin.
All right. There you go. Look, and I should be able to find that number.
You can call the Consumer Protection Hotline as well, and we'll give you the number if you don't find it on the website. So you could call 1-800-422-7128 and talk to the team there, and they'll make sure that they get you the phone number and the website for the Department of Financial Institutions. But yeah, they'll really be able to help you when you have an investment and you have money. You may have a transaction fee, but they take that out of your investment. You don't pay more in order to get your money out, and that's true of any prize that you may be winning. That's true of your investment aspect, but your person would be handling that in those transaction fees in your withdrawal. So that's a big red flag of concern when Kyle told that story.
Yeah, big red flag. Kyle, make that phone call. Thank you very much for calling. Mary in Holman, we'll go to you. Hi, Mary.
Yes, I'm calling because I'm going to have a new roof installed, and on the contract, it says that there's a workmanship warranty of 3 years. And in the state of Wisconsin, that's the maximum warranty for workmanship. And I was just wondering where that came from.
That's probably the minimum. That may be the minimum rather than the maximum.
Yeah. So we don't handle the warranty aspect. It's the disclosure. And I'm not aware of any specific limitation. If a company represents a warranty in a period of time, then they need to honor that warranty for that specific period of time. There could be something with the Office of Commissioner of Insurance, and since they handle warranties that we're just not familiar with that being, but a minimum sounds more accurate than a maximum there. But we'd have to check with the Office of Commissioner of Insurance on that.
And you could give them a call.
Absolutely. The Wisconsin Office of Commissioner of Insurance.
There you go, Mary. Thank you for calling. Carolyn in Lansing, Iowa, we go to you now. Hi, Carolyn.
Hi, thank you.
Sure. What's on your mind?
Okay. The other day I got a text that says, your item has arrived at the distribution center and cannot be delivered due to an incomplete address. Please click the link, and it's uscol.cloud.
Yeah.
And I clicked it.
Oh, you clicked it? Darn.
Yeah. They asked for my name, my middle name, and my complete address, and I put that in. But then they asked for, they said that it would be another 74 cents due, and you could pay by credit card or debit card. And at that, I didn't answer.
Yeah, well, you did the right thing there.
Carolyn, you had me on the edge of your seat when you said they were asking for the payment information, and I'm glad you stopped there because that absolutely is a scam. And the first stage was trying to get a little bit more personal information, and once someone is, you know, willing to do that, then they try and push that scam a little bit further. And by paying that 74 cents, what you're doing is you're giving that account information and you're letting them know where that money's coming from. And ultimately, I would guarantee that that's going to get compromised and you'll see additional charges. So I'm glad you stopped.
I have received several texts like that, Carolyn, over time. So it's a common one for sure.
Well, I really appreciate the story because she described one of the shipping scams really well that we were talking about earlier in the program. And so it can come by text and it can come by email. But when you click that link, they're seeking that additional information and there's really not a package on the other end.
Kent in Ashland emailed to ask how often scammers are apprehended. Who are they? Where are they located? And what are the consequences?
That's a wide open question covering a lot of area. Scammers certainly do get caught. We here at the department have ourselves identified some scammers and held them accountable through a variety of different things. But we also partner with local law enforcement, our federal partners, maybe at the FBI or several other agencies to track them down. But to say, you know, everyone, I think, assumes that they're not really here domestic or located in the U.S., that everyone else is overseas. And certainly there is a percentage of them that are. But it's hard to nail it down and say that everyone gets caught or what percentage do. But certainly we do get some of them.
And, Barbara emailed that her son, a postal inspector for USPS, advised her to never place any payment by check into a post office box or give to a carrier, but always take this type of payment into a post office to mail. That's certainly the safest way, I would guess there, Michael.
It absolutely is. You know, we mentioned earlier, Michelle was providing that great advice on if you want to be truly secure and make sure that it gets to its destination, at least after it leaves your hand, taking it directly to the post office, putting in one of those boxes there in the building, or even handing it over to one of those employees is the best way. You know, it does seem like it may be a little bit cumbersome, but if you're sending money out, whether it be check or what you think is a secure type of payment, it's worth that extra step.
Joseph in Toma, it's your turn. Hi, Joseph.
Good afternoon, sir.
Hi. What's on your mind?
Question. This thing has been resolved, but I just want a little clarity on it. Last year, I got on my credit card billing a charge for $1,800. So I asked my wife if she had made any purchases, which she said no. And then I looked at it, and it says, and I'll read it to you, it says SQ. JOPA endocrinology GOSQ.com. Florida. So I called my credit card company where they're issuing the credit card from and took care of the matter. It was all resolved. But my question has to do is, how could SQ Square get my credit card number and put an $1,800 charge against a company?
Yeah.
That, you know,
a lot of ways they could do it, Michael.
That's a great answer, Larry. There is a lot of ways in which that credit card number could have potentially been obtained. If you are using that for any type of online payments, if you made purchases with shopping, even shopping locally, there may be some situations where some criminals had an opportunity to try and capture that phone, that credit card number. So it's difficult to track down and place an absolute location on where that originated, but I'm glad that you caught it. And that's what we always encourage everyone is take that extra time to look at that credit card statement, look at those bank statements, and make sure that the charges make sense and that you can validate where they're coming from, because that's going to be the first line of defense, and it lies with you.
Yeah. Thank you, Joseph. Appreciate it. Wayne in Prairie du Sac will go to you. Hi, Wayne.
Yeah, good afternoon. I just wanted to, I haven't been on for the full program, so I don't know if this has been addressed, but I wanted to make people aware of a huge scam out there dealing with counterfeit postage stamps. The scam is all over social network to begin with, offering various websites that look like the Postal Service offering discount postage. When one clicks in, or occasionally there's a phone number, you are directed, you can order whatever stamps, quote, stamps you wish. But the double scam that's there is some of the companies are simply getting your credit card information. But secondarily, most people do get the stamps, but they're counterfeit stamps printed in China. And the main fight against this is there is really no such thing as a discount forever stamp. Nobody discounts postage other than really old postage. So if you buy it, it's at a discount. It's either stolen or counterfeit, and a 99% chance it's counterfeit.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely, Wayne. Thanks for bringing this out to the attention. Every once in a while, we do get this type of call when we're on the program, and you're absolutely right. It is a scam. There are counterfeit stamps out there, and they're trying to collect your payment information, and then you end up with a product that it has no value and won't get you your letter mailed or your payment mailed. So going to the post office to purchase your stamps or anyone authorized to be reselling the stamps is where you're going to want to make those purchases and be mindful and watchful of that. When you see those deep discounts online, those are things to be concerned with.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for that, Wayne. Appreciate it. Grant emailed that Apple Pay never transmit your actual CC number, only a unique code, so the number can't be stolen. So as long as you have the correct Apple Pay and not some imposter Apple Pay, you're okay.
That is true. And also, even some credit card companies will allow you to get what they call a virtual number for a one-time purchase, which really achieves the same thing. It masks the number and sends a very, very different number or code to that purchaser. And then, of course, they're allowed to withdraw those funds and it's never used again. So in order to use that, I guess I say effectively, you'd want to get a different number each time, but it's a little added security on top of those protections that the credit card provides themselves.
Mark emailed. He's been receiving a lot of texts and emails inviting him to participate in election surveys containing indecipherable internet links. How does someone identify legitimate links? Michelle.
Oh, that's a tough question and simple at the same time. So you can hover over links to see if where you would be directed matches the sender of the email you've received. If they say they're sending you to a particular company, when you hover over, does it end in that kind of same company name, or are you being redirected somewhere else? That's one way, but you need to be careful when you hover that you don't click or that you don't have an auto click set on your computer so you're not clicking a malicious link. The other thing is validating the source, if it's a survey of any type, of who's really collecting the information and what they are asking and what they will do with that information, election or not. You know, we're going to see more polls and elections, both phone calls and emails, given it's that year. But you need to validate who's actually requesting that information and how they will secure it and what they will do with it. So are they asking you for personal information? That's not needed in a survey. They just want your opinion on something, but they shouldn't need to know who you are and what your social security number is or your bank account. All of that should stay with you and shouldn't be passed forward.
Ralph in Milwaukee, your turn. Hi, Ralph.
Afternoon. I was wondering, what are the two most common things that might be complained about to your agency that you cannot help someone with?
Ah, okay. Well, I think we heard them both. If it's financial securities was one sometimes, Michael? Well,
that's a tough question, Ralph, because I think we like to think we can help with just about anything. But more importantly, if we don't, we know who can help. And so that's really what I would probably focus my response on.
That's a good idea.
Is if we, even if you were to reach out to us and we may not necessarily have the particular authority or expertise to help with that, we know who does. And we're going to get you over to them so that you do get that assistance. So I don't know that I could definitively say here are the most common things that we just outright can't help with, because we know who can.
Yeah, that's a good point. And again, your number is 1-800-422-7128. And, you know, if you call that number and it's something that the department can't help you with, they know who can and they'll give you the right number. So that's kind of a quick way to get it, in a way.
It is. You know, I guess I don't want to try and deflect Ralph's question. If there is anything that I would, to give him some satisfaction in calling in and asking, crypto, recovering cryptocurrency would probably be one if you're a victim of a scam and unfortunately it's using cryptocurrency. It would be very, very difficult to trace that back and get those funds recovered. There are some federal agencies who do have a couple tools to help, but even that's incredibly challenging. So scams that involve cryptocurrency, real, real tough.
And on that note, here we are out of time. I had some more questions for you, but and so did our listeners, but that's the way it is, and we'll look forward to your next visit. Thank you both, Michelle and Michael, so much for being with us today. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Larry.
Michelle Reinen is Director of the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection. Michael Domke is the Administrator for the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection within our Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Great to have them back, and they will be back again in 2 months, and we'll do this all over again. Tomorrow on the program, my old pal Patty Nagai is back with us to talk about creating great containers for your garden. We can talk about starting seeds and a whole lot more in the garden area. That's tomorrow at 11. In the meantime, thank you so much for listening, and please stay with us. Hey, we got lots of interesting stuff right through the afternoon here on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Larry Mueller.